Hey, John Bowman, it's James West. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks, James. Glad to be here.
Glad
Yeah,
to have
we're
both of you
happy
guys
to be on
today.
the call here.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to this. This is our 31st installment of the Invest with James West podcast series. This is also another episode where we sit down with the CEOs of private companies backed by venture capital that are leaning in with their technology offerings. This one is unique as this company is in the business of helping the chemicals industry enable optimization through control. And for those of you that don't know, Redlist is a cloud-based mobile-ready app that eliminates data gaps in their managers, teams, and machines. John Keller is with us today. He's an entrepreneur, investor, and is currently the president of Redlist, providing production safety and maintenance apps for a variety of businesses. Located out of Salt Lake City, John is building the software and teams that are helping his customers build the world. Industries of focus include oil and gas, mining, steel, telecom asset management, construction, crane, paper, sawmill, cement, food, beverages, and more. Basically everything. John's a guy with a big Brigham Young University with a BA in international business, and the company was recently awarded a major contract with ExxonMobil, which we'll discuss in detail during the podcast. Joining John today is Bowman Mitchell, lubricants brand and offer strategist for ExxonMobil. Bowman will represent Exxon regarding the partnership, his field experience with Redlist, and the potential of the platform to help transform how production, maintenance, and safety are done in the future of oil and gas. Bowman Mitchell has worked for ExxonMobil for over a decade. He worked as an industrial lubricant sales engineer, providing industrial engineering support for the major automotive ecosystem players, including automotive steel manufacturing, oil and gas, and more. His experience led him to become an ExxonMobil industry expert in the oil and gas and mining markets, where he worked to provide solutions for some of the country's largest primary metals mines, as well as the oil and gas upstream and midstream teams that consume lubricants and fuels. He's recently transitioned to become an ExxonMobil lubricants brand and offer strategist the North American market. Bowman came across Redlist in its earliest stages and has been introducing it to customers for over 5 years. So again, welcome, gentlemen. So I think as
Thank
we
you,
get into
Jim.
the business here, maybe for as we start, you know, admittedly we're not technology analysts. So if you could, John, back up a bit and give us the high level, you know, elevator pitch of what the Redlist business is and how you make money.
Awesome, thanks. Yeah, so Redlist is really kind of a subscription platform that allows business to communicate back and forth and really kind of optimize their production. So the focus is to keep all of the machines running and the teams accountable for where they should be and what they should be doing so that everybody can actually kind of reduce headaches and get more done. So that's kind of that's what we're all about.
Okay, makes sense to me. So what's the company's history? I'd love to hear how you began and how you progressed to where Redlist is today.
Yeah, so I have a partner, Talmadge Wagstaff. He grew up in the crane industry. So ever since he was 4 years old, he was out greasing zercs on big, 600-ton cranes. And so as he kind of progressed, he's always had a familiarity with heavy equipment industry. He went on to school, got his master's degree in civil engineering and mechanical engineering. And then he actually had about, I don't know exactly how many years ago, but about a decade ago, he went to go work at ExxonMobil. While he was there, he realized that a lot of the companies that he was servicing had the same problems that his parents' company had. So he worked for ExxonMobil as a field engineer as well, helping in industrial engineering applications and really working with some of the bigger industrial companies across the country. And he got called back to his family's crane company to kind of take over as the COO there. And while he was there, he kind of kept realizing, man, we're still running these same problems. They haven't, while I was gone, they haven't fixed them yet. There's not really a product that offers what it is that I want. And he, after obviously all the experience that he'd had working with companies across the country, he realized, man, there really is a gap between what is happening in the field and what is getting reported into accounting, right? We focus all the time
Sure.
on what needs to go into accounting so people can get paid. But really, how do you help people in the field do their job faster, easier, more accurately, right? And so that really is, so as he kind of started really chewing on this idea of coming out with a platform that could handle that, and he's got a lot of experience in the engineering side, and he was looking for a tech partner and a business development partner. And so you know, came across with my other business partner is Casey Pettingill. He owns a company called Red Pepper Software, and he kind of came on as initial tech partner. And in my experience with Casey and some of the experience that I've had in various entrepreneurship and business enterprises, you know, I started looking at Redless in its earliest infancy as maybe an investment. And as we started working more and more together, I fell in love with the team. I think the vision is massive. The opportunity is real. And so I kind of have been, I've just jumped in ever since.
Okay, great. That's very exciting to hear about. So why do you think the market was ignoring this opportunity until Redless came in and offered the solution? I mean, it's clear that there's numerous benefits of going paperless, removing siloed communication systems, and moving towards an automated way of working, but clearly the opportunity was there and others didn't see it. Why do you think that is?
So I think it has a lot to do, well, there's two parts to this. The first is that the nature of CMMS, right, computerized maintenance management systems, I mean, it's been around for a long time, and it's really focused on getting the accounting systems to match and get everything to reconcile and optimizing from accounting outward, right?
Right.
So, and they've done a really good job at squeezing the optimization out of that. The challenge they run into, though, is we're now the next phase of optimization and efficiencies is coming from the field inward. And those systems, the systems that are really good at accounting and making sure everything falls into exactly the right buckets, is not actually very equipped to handle the dynamic atmosphere and environment that goes on in the field. And so that's been historically, the big players who are really successful in the accounting side centric kind of framework have really struggled in making easy, adaptable, friendly tools for the field. So that's one point. And I think the second point is that, you know, it is a complicated problem because within a business, you have a lot of information passing between production, maintenance, and safety. And each of these different groups is doing all their stuff, and there's different regulatory bodies that are in charge of making sure that each of those divisions or departments is doing what they're supposed to do. And so there's a lot of territorialism and silos that go on. And so to introduce a product or a tool that can centralize and get those to cooperate, I mean, there's a lot of cultural adaptation that is needed and needs to kind of be available through the app and through the support of the adoption of that app.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, how did you link up with CSL Capital Management and your other backers? It's always interesting how these tie-ups occur because I know cultural fit is equally as important as the term sheet itself.
I think that's a great question. So we're based out of Utah, and you know, in Utah we kind of call ourselves the Silicon Slopes, right, as opposed to Silicon Valley. So there's a lot, yeah, there's a lot of tech companies out here, and as we've gone around and as we were growing, initially it was all our own capital we put into the company, and very close friends as well, and when it came time to go find an investor, like a real backer, it was apparent to us that we have lots of resources in Utah, people who understand SaaS, the subscription software world, but there's not a lot of people who understand the life cycle, the climate, and the really kind of just the culture that goes into oil and gas and really heavy equipment related industries. And so we actually just kind of, this was probably about 2 years ago, we kind of hit the road, and we spent a lot of time out in Houston, obviously, from our relationship with ExxonMobil and some of our other customers. And so while we're out in Houston, we just started really working to network and meet a lot of people. And and throughout that process, you know, I had a chance to meet with Vasu Guruswamy from CSL, and he is, you know, has extensive experience in Schlumberger and a lot of just great background from the technical side, the investment side. And we really found a great cultural alignment between, I think, where we are and where we're headed. And that was awesome. And again, we're really grateful for where we're from, and we've got a lot of great software experience here, but you know, the experience that the CSL provides was awesome. And so we really were glad that it worked out.
That's great. That's great to hear. Speaking of the software side, I mean, we, and I know we're all sitting here pretending not to be in the midst of the coronavirus breakout, but we are. And you know, I've got a good idea of how the rigs and the completion crews and stuff like that are coping with it. So, what's happening on the software side of the business? Have you seen disruptions to your business?
You know, that's a great question. And there's probably three things that we've really seen happen. And the first is that with a lot of the quarantine that's going on, we've needed to work from home. And as a software company, that does not disrupt us.
Sure.
As a growing company, you always want to keep that energy and keep together as much as you can in person. But that business has been going on pretty much as usual from that regard. But that actually brings us to the next big trend that we've seen, which is that companies are becoming aware that they also need remote communication technology, right? Companies that are used to paper and pencil processes or Excel, they really are kind of waking up to this. And so we've actually had a tremendous amount of increase in the interest in coming in the remote management tools that we provide. So we've seen a lift.
Okay.
Then the last final thing is obviously things have slowed down in terms of businesses that were maybe right about to close. As we've seen equities drop pretty hard with some of our customers, they've needed to pause some stuff while they kind of realign their troops. So we're experiencing that with as much as anybody else.
Yep, I would imagine so. So before we get into the technology in a little more detail, I'd love to spend some time on the recent news of the partnership with ExxonMobil. Congrats, of course, on that. And so we understand the lubrication management platform will be used by the company. Can we maybe talk about how the deal came about? You know, what's it like having ExxonMobil as a partner? And then what have the customer conversations been like after that announcement? And John, I'll let you take that one.
Great, yeah. So so a little bit about how the deal came about. Obviously, I would say our first discussions with them started 4 or 5 years ago, and we recognized that there was a gap in the field, both in how to ensure accurate and easy and fast collection of a lot of the data that their global lube engineers and sales engineers were doing. And then also to make sure that while we can improve that process, also providing the opportunity to increase the value that ExxonMobil is bringing to its customers. And so we met with a number of executives in Houston. They've come out to Utah, and it's taken a long time. It's been a lot of discussion and negotiations. As you can imagine, Exxon's not a small company. There's a lot of T's across and I's to dot. So the nice thing is it's a global partnership. So what that means is we kind of have a relationship that lets us access all of the global marketing and mobile business units around the world. So we're focusing initially on North America, and you know, we're a pretty small and agile company, and we have a lot of that gives us a lot of great strengths to kind of adapt quickly and to move in a lot of different directions very quickly. And working with ExxonMobil, it's been awesome. They've got a tremendous amount of resources. Their staff are extremely talented and a lot of fun to work with. And what we're also finding is it's kind of learning how the Titans do business has been kind of a good experience for us as we can teach, mature, and grow there.
Sure. And have other customer conversations picked up as a result of that announcement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been piloting with Exxon for a couple years before this in a formal pilot, and then on to more of a formal stage. And a lot of customers were kind of really, you know, looking like, to see just how real the relationship was going to be before they pulled the trigger.
Sure.
And so now that it's official, you know, we've definitely seen an increase, even with the environment as it is, we've seen a dramatic increase in customers from ExxonMobil and their interest in the tool. So we're really excited.
That's great to hear. Congratulations again. Well, maybe Bowman, if I can turn it over to you for a minute, could you describe, you know, what led you to partner with Redlist, and just to maybe the we conceptualize it in our minds, to what extent of the operations that you oversee are strategic for the company?
Yeah, of course. So as John stated previously, I've been involved with Redlist for the past 4 to 5 years. And in my engagement with them, I was working in the field when they first started doing the negotiations with the headquarters and the global teams. And I was involved in a lot of the piloting of the tool and making sure it's a viable business product and something that the customers actually value and are willing to pay for. But really, if conceptually, if we think about why we are partnering with Redlist, really, it comes down to, well, a current state of market is a good example, you know, where there's ups and downs in the market. There's, you know, oil is a constantly changing environment, and to stabilize, our customers are always looking for solutions to problems, not necessarily, hey, who's the cheapest oil? You know, they want to know, how can I run my business more lean, and how can I increase efficiencies? And they're more and more coming to their suppliers for a solution and a partnership versus a transactional buyer. And we've seen that in the industry. We found that the more we steer away from being a transactional buyer, the better relationships we have with our customers, and the more long-term we can establish those partnerships with them. And it becomes more profitable for us. So, you know, in the past, what we've been doing, we've always been a heavy field offer where we've got a lot of people in the field to support our customer base in the industrial world, oil and gas, mining. Like I said, that's kind of been my two main focuses for the last 5 years. But what we've traditionally done is, you know, we come and we help our customers find problems, try to come up with solutions. And in the past, it's always been, you know, oh, you've got something wrong with your filtration, you need to up your filtration. Well, let me bring my third party filtration expert that I have in my back pocket. And you've got a software issue. Well, we've got a really good solution, a company called Redlist. Let me bring them with us. And then, you know, maybe it's something else. You know, you've always got, like, you know, a bearing manufacturer, a CAT rep, or a Komatsu rep that you think is a good ally to have with you to bring a full offer, a solution to the customer.
Sure.
And what we've realized is, you know, we're missing out on a huge opportunity to capture the value as an ExxonMobil offer, be able to provide the solution to our customers holistically. So over the past couple of years, ExxonMobil has started announcing the brand MobilServe. You may have heard it in the market. And part of my role is to develop solutions and offers strategically that will enable us to provide a full offer of services that are branded under that MobilServe brand. So hence the MobilServe lubricant management powered by Redlist that we're just announcing that partnership. So it's kind of been a, you know, rather than start, you know, from the past, bringing in partnerships separately, we want to be able to bring them together as a group, as a MobilServe brand.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, not asking you to speak for the whole industry, but you are ExxonMobil, so you kind of can. But why do you think that management programs weren't a core focus for some of the new technologies that we've seen over the past several years?
Oh, yeah, great question. So if you think about kind of what has been available in the past, kind of like John said, that most companies have a really good, robust accounting software. Most people that we talk to, it's a corporate mandate. They're, you know, multi-locations, national accounts. They've got a system that they run their business on, and it's very good for running a company, but usually they're not very good and nimble enough to run a reliability program to the right level that it needs to run. So we see that everywhere we go. And, you know, from an ExxonMobil service standpoint, our job is to help a customer reduce the failures, help to get them operating more efficiently. That might mean, you know, doing less hours on your, or less oil changes. It might mean getting more life out of that equipment. It might be meantime between failure extensions. All of those things come into play. And when you're trying to capture data or determine the effectiveness of a reliability program, and the only inputs you have are pieces of paper, stacks of, you know, reports and filing cabinets, it's very, right, very difficult to build a program around that. Does that make sense?
No, so it certainly does. And so what were the steps that that you underwent to ensure that Redlist would be, you know, effectively utilized by, you know, your employees and engineers? And how about the process of onboarding an external vendor's piece of software into a system of a company like Exxon?
Yeah, obviously one of the critical parts of having a vendor that you're going to have hosting customer data in the cloud. Obviously they use Microsoft Azure, which is very, we all know, is very secure, but at the same time, everybody has to have their own cybersecurity. So ExxonMobil, we have a very stringent, you know, that's a very high priority for our customer base, is to not allow their data as well as our data to be exposed to a cybersecurity attack. So that's obviously number one. You got to make sure any software company that you're dealing with has that capability. So, you know, as we're onboarding them, they're going through a pretty rigorous process. And
right.
But that's like, you know, those are table stakes to be able to play ball in our world.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
But as far as onboarding and determining, is this the right fit? Like I said, it's been a pretty long process. We've been going through pilots and, you know, going through various groups globally and in the North America market to validate.
Sure.
And tease out, hey, is this a customer offer that people are willing to pay for? So over the last, I would say, 3 years, you know, we've gone in as that partnership, like we've said, is, you know, come in with us, see the solution, but it's not necessarily mobile branded yet. And going through that couple of years process has shown us how valuable the tool is.
Right.
And then we've also paired it with offers. You know, like, really, you want to know that the solution you're providing is also going to enable you to get business, right? You don't want to just be going out and selling someone else's software. You want it to be able to integrate into that customer base to, one, retain business for a long period of mm-hmm. time, because you're bringing a value. You're not just a transactional buyer or supplier, right? And then two, if you're going in to acquire business or, you know, become a new partner to a potential customer, you want that business or that relationship and that offering to be linked to the point where, hey, I can be your software helper, supplier, build your reliability program, remove out the excess waste and help you identify failures. And also, I want you to buy my oil as well. So that's one of the things. It's got to work both ways. You can't just be ExxonMobil is an oil company, not a software company. But at the same time, we're not a software company, right? So we're really good at assisting our customers in lubrication and making sure they have the right product in the right place at the right interval. But we are not a software company. So this partnership really was a necessity, in my opinion, to be able to provide a gap stop for this, you know, this huge need in the market. So
that's great. Well, Bumman, I really appreciate that. Maybe John, if we could move over into the technology itself, maybe first, if I could just ask, do you have an idea of the size of the total addressable market for your technology, and what are the key kind of verticals that you're targeting first?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you look at the total addressable market, there are obviously a lot of different ways to break up that market. If you look at just the field services industry, that's about a $1 billion industry, and it's expected to grow pretty dramatically over the next 5 years, right, to reach about $5 billion. Now, our market crosses over a lot of other places, right? So we find ourselves, you can think of, if you were to look at the global market of Internet of Things, which is a term has probably been overused, but it's a very big concept of all these connected elements that are talking and automated and working together, and there's some human interaction, and there's some just machine-to-machine interaction. So that market, that's a very large market. Like, that market is about $1 trillion big today, and it's growing. And that maybe almost sounds trite to say that big, but sure. If you take that large market, focus on field services, we find ourselves at about a $1 to $5 billion segment of that in our really core element today. And then, of course, there's a lot of room to grow is what I'm trying to express.
Okay, that sounds great. So maybe just for the benefit of our listeners and myself, depending on a potential customer, could you describe the user platform of the app, how the app works, and obviously we'll point people to your website, but I'd love to just get a quick overview of the app.
Yeah, no, that's great. No problem. So the app, you can imagine that you have people in the back office, you have stakeholders and owners and managers that want to be able to see what's going on in the nuts and bolts of the company. So any information that's being gathered can very easily be configured or organized from the desktop view or from the mobile view. So as Bowman mentioned, we have, we use a lot of the different tools that are available in the Microsoft Azure Cloud. And so we have an embedded business intelligence tool that really lets any level of company decision maker see the dashboards and the information that they want to see, whether that's from their computer or from their smartphone, as long as that information has been appropriated to them, right? So you can obviously control who gets what. People in the field typically would access, depending on what type of environment they're in, if they're in a manufacturing environment with Wi-Fi, they might just use the web app version, right? Which is just kind of, you can access it on a tablet or a smartphone or something where you'd just be able to kind of be in interaction with the entire web platform. But there are a lot of our customers who are in places that don't have good data feeds, right? So whether if you're working on an offshore platform somewhere, or if you're working, way out in a desert somewhere, or even in just different parts of your mind or your location, there might be bad. You might have internet, but it might have a few dead spots. And so it's really been critical for us to create a basic tool on Android and iOS that people can do the field work that they need to do in the phone. So we have our basic digital forms tool. You can record time, look at different production tickets, various reliability efforts, things that you just need to do while you're out in the field. And then as soon as you come back into a data feed, then it kind of will wirelessly sync up just kind of in the background with whatever, Wi-Fi or data provider you have, however you've configured it. So you have this concept of computers and mobile devices that are speaking to the cloud, where you can share that information and then appropriately use that information that's coming in to either kick out work orders, automate different activities, or provide reports for people who want to see them. So,
okay.
I don't know if that helps answer your question.
John, I'd like to step in and maybe add a couple highlights that I feel are critical in this piece. So, having that, how it applies really to the oil and gas industry specifically, there's a lot of remote assets So having a native app where you can go out and do that work, do all your inspections, do all your tasks from a digital app that can then feed into the quick views that the regional managers or the, you know, the field or the fleet manager wants to see what's being done. As soon as that person comes back and triggers a Wi-Fi or a self-service, it's able to upload all of the current state of the equipment reliability, right? And so it gives visibility real time to everybody in the company. And that's something that's really not able to be done in a lot of systems out there currently, because you're collecting it on a laptop, you're collecting on pieces of paper, you're collecting it in a, you know, on a spreadsheet or whatever. And in order to get visibility into all that massive amount of data, there's a couple steps of data entry that's really inefficient.
Sure.
And because it's so inefficient or complicated to do, the data isn't really valuable or usable to the company to make an insightful decision on, hey, you know, should I make an action based on what's going on in the field? And because of their inability to see their equipment, mm-hmm. it's very costly. You know, things fail. Things are happening that the person that's in charge of paying for those failures doesn't realize is happening. One really good example that we did with a pilot company was they had some major failures on cranes. Mm-hmm. And it's a simple issue, right? As a crane telescopes up and down, there's things called wear pads that need grease on them. And if you're not greasing them regularly and they become dry, that crane chatters up and down as it goes out and back in. And if you let that go for longer than a week or so, it can suck one of those wear pads in, which essentially makes you have to rebuild that. It could be $1 million rebuild. They're sure. realistically just parts. So the gap between people, equipment, and actual people that are paying for that failure is a huge gap in the industry. So by having a digital form where you can just add a question, is the boom chattering? You know, the operator could care less. I mean, it's annoying to him, but he doesn't have to pay for it if it fails.
Right.
And he really doesn't have the insight into the business as to how much that costs. So maybe if he did, it might make him change his work ethic or whatever. And the mechanic, you know, there's a delay time when he's going to get a paper inspection that says, even if they did ask the question, it's going to be probably a week or two delay before he gets to it. Right.
So right.
you identify a problem and then you communicate, how do I capture or connect the people with the operator and the decision maker and the person writing checks and the equipment help? And once you do that, what we did is we essentially added a question, is it chattering? And then we communicated that response as soon as it's submitted to one, the mechanic, by creating him an automatic right. work order to come out and grease it. And two, mm-hmm. we connected them with the ExxonMobil lube engineer. And the goal was to right. eliminate the failure. And so
right.
we kept getting, you know, the lube engineer kept getting the emails, and essentially right at the beginning, you know, this was a very common problem. And so he would forward the emails on to the owner of the company that was paying for these failures. And then the owner of the company would send a note back to the mechanic saying, hey, we need to get on this before one of these fails again. And then
right.
what happened is what you find happening is the culture of the company starts changing. So, you know, fast forward 1 month into this initiative where you have everybody connected, you know, the operators then start filling out these digital forms by saying, don't worry, ExxonMobil lube engineer, I'm going to get to this today. Rather than just letting it happen, they're proactive now, and they're actually doing the work without having to be told to do it. And they realize, well, why is this such a big deal? They now know that it's such a big deal that the owner of the company cares about it. So it changes like everybody's mindset about, okay, we're all a team. We're all trying to drive down these inefficiencies, and this is the app that's enabling us to do that with our customer base. So that's just one good example of giving visibility to the whole company, focusing on something that is could be really remote. And then I guess the one last thing that I would say is that it allows you to bridge that huge gap that's in the industry of, we have a lot of really good, talented people that have a ton of experience that are leaving. But then we also have a lot of new people coming in that might not have the experience, but they're used to technology. They want the technology. You know, in the past, they're like, why would we use this archaic, or right now they're saying, why would we use this archaic computer to do this? This doesn't make any sense. And the new people in the industry are hungry for this technology, but there's a gap of knowledge and an experience. So this tool allows you to build in the experience and bridge the gap between the older workforce and the new workforce. And it's working really, really well. You know, you might have a guy out in the middle of an oil field that doesn't know what the, let's say the right torque to torque down a certain bolt on a pump jack. And he could go call the experienced guy that knows, or he could go back to the shop or his truck and look at the manual. But really, if you have a digital form that you can custom build at any given time, you can go right in and look at that form and have all of the information from that experienced person right there at your fingertips. And it's something that people are really gravitating towards.
That's a great example, and certainly answers, I think, a lot of the questions we have about the technology and how it's being used and how it's making its way through the oil field. Maybe just a few more for me, John and Bowman. John, could you better define how the digital inspection business is different from some of the other offerings, and you know, who tends to be the end users there, and what's the go-to-market strategy?
Yeah, so digital inspections, there are a lot of people who have whatever their accounting system is, or their ERP or their EAM, they kind of want to upset the apple cart. It was a really big headache to get it installed, very expensive process, and they've tried using some of the tools in it, but they find themselves still using paper and pencil in the field or Excel sheets or something, right? And so they want just to do something more to be able to keep track of that. And so we have that as a basic offering, just kind of the hook to get people in. You know, we have some large companies that just, this is the only tool that they use because it's just one person in a safety department saw that they would really like to streamline it. And we obviously have this, we're a fan of land and expand, right? So there's lots of different ways to get into a company. And so the form offering is a really simple way. Anything that anybody's doing on paper, and they wish that it was digital, it allows for that. And then once you have that out there, you can very easily add things on top. I mean, one of the things just to kind of consider while we're looking at the tool and some of its features that Bowman described, once you have this basic foundation in place, the tool is actually built with a very friendly API. It's hungry to connect with more information and more data and more systems. So really you can kind of, you might start with kind of forms is kind of a gateway drug in some sense, right? And you start with that, and then over time you may want to add, you want the form to start pulling in relevant data from your assets or your people or other condition monitoring, right? And then at some point you're like, man, I want to, now that I have all this information in the system, I want this to tie into my ultrasonic to make sure that XYZ bearings are healthy, or I want to tie this into my RFID reader so that my guys just have to, you know, don't have to even think, they just kind of put their tablet over an RFID and it starts to kind of act for them. So there's a lot of different ways to layer the system up, and we built it that way really to kind of provide, there's really no limit. It's just a question of the company's data is only as good as what you put in. So we start with this foundation of the data coming in, and the most basic foundation of that is this digital forms piece.
Okay, and John, that makes a lot of sense.
Add a little bit to that, because really that's where I see a lot of fault in other programs, is really the bread and butter to how this works is it makes the gathering of data super easy. Not only is it easier for the the user to do his job, but it eliminates a lot of the annoying parts of his job. For example, you've got a mechanic that's very highly skilled. You're paying him, you know, a high wage for his skill as a mechanic, but then you have half of his job rewriting the stuff he's already done or entering it into a computer or onto a spreadsheet. And so the ease of entry is really what enables this to work. And it enables the collection of the data to feed up to the managers that want to make the insightful decisions. And in a lot of ways, a lot of companies will go out and they'll want to do the reverse. They'll want to say, hey, I want this data and I want this dashboard and I want this KPI to track. And so they'll go to a system that has really cool dashboards. But if the data feeding in isn't easy to get that data in, those dashboards will never mean anything to anybody. And then the program will fall on its face, and then they'll come back and say, hey, you didn't provide the, you know, this isn't doing everything you said it was going to do. So the real bread and butter to this technology is the ability to capture data in any device and really any person. It doesn't matter really the age. We all have an iPhone, and we all know how to drag our finger across it and click yes and no and yes and no and, you know, select your age. You know, that's how easy it is to do these. And the last thing I'll say in this little section is those forms, you know, to digitize a form is very easy. It's customizable to the point where we'll go to a customer and teach them how to build a form in the tool.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, okay, get out of the way. I've this makes sense. I got this. And, you know, it's not just like digitizing paper. It's creating like logic. You know, do I want to require this question? Yes, sure. Push that button, say require. Do I want to get a picture of the problem that they're saying is failed? Yes, attach a picture, require that. You know, do I want to create a work order? Of course. Well, when do you want to recreate your work order? When I say fail, you know? And like, basically, you know, would you like to upload a schematic of, you know, this 3516 Caterpillar engine that's out there to allow the guy to see what he's looking at, you know? Like all of that stuff, a customer can build themselves with very little like support. And
right.
So it's very customizable, but it's very interactive. And that is, you know, in my opinion, what makes this tick. Because the data comes in and you're able to consolidate a lot of siloed operations that, you know, companies will be running their safety program on some tool, their tire tracking tool on another, their inspection sheets or paper. They might have a, you know, an asset life tracking tool that's an Excel spreadsheet. They might have, you know, GPS monitoring system. That's an isolated thing. They might have oil analysis in another login on another website. And really, this is a solution where you can kind of pull all those into one platform and live in kind of one spot without having to bounce through all these different places. And the data flow, like I said, the bread and butter is how easy it is to capture data.
Okay. Wow. That's a great description. Maybe just one last question about the technology before we go into a couple of parting thoughts here. You know, on Redlist likes to highlight that it's simple enough for your entire team. And as a manager who still being made fun of by his guys that report to him that he didn't know what Google Chrome was a year ago. how can you guarantee that for dinosaurs like myself?
So let me answer that with kind of two quick points. So the first point is that it is never done, right? This is constantly evolving. We're a company that deals in data. And so we're always getting data. We have analytics running on our web stuff. We have analytics running on our native applications. So we're getting a lot of data. And we're obviously getting a lot of feedback from customers. As you can hear from Bowman, you know, as the people are using this tool, it becomes a real part of their workflow. And we are very involved in making sure that our tool supports that. It has to support that. So there's a lot of information, a lot of systems that go on internally, and we're constantly evolving. We have a pretty rigid, we roll out new updates about every 2 weeks, you know, kind of like what you might, how you might log into Google now and again and see if they've improved the button or they've done things. So that's always happening. But so that's just one thing to say. Customers always want production to be higher. They always want their data to be more accurate. They always want accessing it to be faster and easier. That's never going to go away. And so we've really kind of aligned our processes to evolve towards that. And then the second point on this, and I'm sure Bowman has some stories as well, right, is that one of the things we get pushback on all the time is to say, hey, we've got this, you know, a lot of our old guys are never going to touch this. They hate technology. And we're really scared they're not going to adopt it, you know. And what we have discovered is that that's not at all the case when it comes to, you know, doing their job. What we've learned is that, you know, older people are still using Facebook and they're still using their phone. They're still watching Netflix. They're still conditioned to to technology on a certain level. And a lot of the reporting features that Bowman was describing, the fact that you can easily express reporting, you can show the entire company very quickly who's participating, who's not participating, who's on board and who's off and who's not on board. And what we've discovered is that age has absolutely nothing to do with who participates and doesn't participate in the program. What we do find, however, is that people who are typically bad actors, the guys who are kind of pencil whipping their forms, who are kind of skirting around certain requirements and stuff like that, those are the guys that seem to be the slowest to adopt because it brings a real level of accountability. And so as far as, but age, you know, we ourselves were kind of surprised because, you know, we'd heard a lot of our customers have said that. It's always been a big concern for us. But when we actually look at the data, the demographics of adoption is not by age. It's really by kind of attitude and culture.
Right. Okay.
And one of the things I'll add to that, John, is, you know, even with my own grandparents, the things that they're scared of when they're trying to try out new technologies, they're afraid of breaking it or somehow pushing the wrong button or, oh shoot, is this going to be, I'm going to push the wrong thing and it's going to ruin the system. And really the ability to be able to add permissions to the tool to where the users that are inputting data can't really break anything. You know, it's simple. It's just like you're getting on your phone and looking up a picture, you know, sliding up with your finger, push yes, no, and submit. Like there's nothing really to break based on how you build it. And so, right. You know, that's one thing about the technology. It's so familiar to what they're already doing in their lives. It's not like you're trying to tell them, hey, in order to find this part, you have to push *189435 star and then pound and then submit. You know, like there's nothing tricky. You know, it's very similar to what they're living in their own ecosystem. We have seen a pretty easy adoption with people, regardless of age.
Okay, great. Well, gentlemen, this has been extremely informative. I really appreciate both you guys hopping on with me today. Congratulations on your partnership. John, definitely congratulations on the success of Redlist. And we'll be checking in with you guys in a few more months. So take care.
Great. Hey, thanks.
Appreciate your time doing this for us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.